Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kentucky Ag Matters, a podcast designed to inform and educate both producers and consumers about all matters affecting agriculture. On this week's show, Jay, David, and Vicki sit down with Ms. Sharon Furches, Callaway County grain farmer and second vice president of Kentucky Farm Bureau. And as always, we'll wrap things up with this week's timely tip. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy the show. Well, hello, everybody.
Hey, Jay.
Hey, Jay. Hello.
David, how are you doing today?
Getting along pretty good. Waiting on a little bit of rain to come through, maybe, I think, again here the first part of next week. But we've had some timely rain, so everything's looking really good. And I'm sure our guests will be able to elaborate on some timely rains that they received last week. But, you know, we haven't gotten too much, so that's a good thing. So,
you know, it's been one of those things. Last year we were feast or famine. We did not, in our part of the world, we didn't have any rain, it seems like, until I think I went from the first week in June to the first week in August with like 3/4 of an inch or something. Yep. It wasn't much.
Much different this year.
This year is much different. We've had some dry spells, which, looking back on them, gave us time to get a lot of things done, or we might be farther behind than what we are now.
That's
but
right.
We almost have two corn crops this year. And we, you know, I was talking with Vicki before the show today. When I go to the state fair every year, you're waiting for somebody to have a combine out, but it just hadn't started. But by the time I get back, you know, the third week of August or so, there's somebody shelling corn somewhere. This year we may have a little bit early, but I think the bulk of it's going to be maybe Labor Day before we really get seriously shelling any corn.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be take it that long to dry down, you know, and some of it's going to take it that long to mature, because we've gotten, you know, we had corn that was tossing, and then we had corn that was 6 inches in McLean County. So, I mean, it's all over the board for sure, all over Western Kentucky, to be real honest. Yep.
And then there are some fields that you got two separate corn crops, like you were saying, in the same field. You know, because you've got some that when we had that 7, 8, 10 inches of rain and had to replant, but not the whole field had to be replanted. So, now,
which 10-inch rain are you talking about?
Well,
we've had two or three.
Well, we only got, I think, one of those. I think this year y'all have gotten more than of those than my part of the world did. So, but there is definitely some varying crop stages within the same field this year, particularly in corn.
Standing as long as this corn crop will have to, the one thing that I've noticed really different about this year and about our rains that we have had, we've had no traditional storm fronts come from the south or the southeast like we usually, southwest like we usually do. They've all kind of come from the north. And because of that, because we've had no rain coming from the south, the humidity's been lower on a lot of days. We've had some days that it got up there pretty good, but it's not a typical year. I don't know if that means we're not going to have tropical storms or not going to have hurricanes coming from that direction. A lot of years we depend upon those rains to make a soybean crop, especially the double crop beans we raise in this part of the world. But hopefully we can lay off of those and not have any storms or strong winds late that this corn crop's going to have to stand up to.
Yeah, anytime we get a storm out of the north, it's never good.
Right.
It's never good. My grandfather used to tell me that. He said, son, if it rains coming out of the north, you better look out. And it pretty well holds true. It's always pretty rough. So
certainly has been. We've got a guest with us today, Ms. Sharon Furches. How are you doing, ma'am?
I'm doing good. Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you here. We were talking right before the show. I had the good fortune to be Sharon's county agent many, many moons ago, long time ago.
It's been a while.
Started in Callaway County. I worked there for a couple of years before I transferred, but got to know Tripp very well, and of course was on the Farm Bureau board with him at the time. And
that's right.
Your whole family is involved.
They are.
I think that's the one word we could use to describe is involved in a lot of different organizations, not the least of which is Farm Bureau. Tell us a little bit about your history with Farm Bureau and how that came to be.
Sure. We were very, very young at the time. Back in 1987, we were asked to be a part of a Kentucky Farm Bureau Young Farmer contest. It was Outstanding Young Farm Family, had never heard of it, knew a little bit about the insurance side of Farm Bureau, but nothing too detailed. And we knew some folks who had been in the contest the year before, so we said yes, we'll fill out the paperwork, came to Louisville, were in the top three in the state. I believe we were runner-ups that year, and did it again the following year and happened to win the contest. So it we really went to a Young Farmer Conference in January. After that, there was an opening on our district level to serve on the Young Farmer Committee, and we were off and running. We were bitten by the bug, for sure. We met a lot of friends. We had been involved in Kentucky Young Farmer Association, which a lot of folks do, Farm Bureau mm-hmm. and Young Farmer mm-hmm. Association, and a lot of mutual friends in both of those groups. So we knew a lot of folks there already, and we just made really lifelong friends. And today, Tripp served on the Kentucky Farm Bureau Board for 12 years. 5 years ago, he retired from that, and I ran for that open seat, and I joined the board at that time. And then the following year, joined the executive committee, was elected second vice president. But we have both done a lot of committee work over the years and been very involved. But we both have had the opportunity to look around the boardroom and see how many of those people we have known for 30 plus years now.
Sure.
And it's they've come up through the organization just like we have, and we're all still great friends. And you know, those great farm friends are so important to you. You can commiserate with them. You can do research with them and find out what's going on the farm, but in their families and that kind of thing too.
So. Well, and family was the word I was fixing to
absolutely.
Use. Absolutely. When you're with that Farm Bureau family, that's exactly what it becomes. When you
it
spend
is.
That much time with them, you've probably spent as much or more time with some of those folks traveling and meeting than you have some of your own family.
You're absolutely right. And Kentucky Young Farmers was the same way. But you do travel with them, and there were certain meetings that we certainly took our children, and now my grandchildren are able to accompany me, and it's expected in those organizations, and I'm so proud of that. Farm Bureau is a grassroots organization, so of course we function from the county up, very different from corporate America that generally has a CEO up at the top of things calling the shots, but the county Farm Bureaus do that for us, and we're really proud of that.
Awesome.
Yeah, I think that, you know, Farm Bureau organization, I think, of course, as an extension, there's a great partnership between Cooperative Extension and Kentucky Farm Bureau.
Yes.
It has been for years and years and years. I know I've been an extension agent for 22 years, and I know that immediately, as soon as I was announced and you start your job as the ag agent, then you're, you know, just within a day or two, the Farm Bureau, you know, office contacted me, welcomed me. Of course, I was in my county. I knew them. You know,
sure.
I was in my home county, but still in a different row. And they reach out to you, and you know, because you're on their county board. So as an ag agent, you're on those county boards. And I think it's, you know, when you can get organizations that can work together like that, because we're all in this for the same reason. We're trying to help the agricultural communities throughout the state, and being able to partner with Farm Bureau is just like it's just a natural fit, I think.
Sure.
Sure. I know when I first started in Murray, it was much the same way. The agency manager at the time, Mr. Ray Broach, mm-hmm. was on our county extension council. So we were Farm Bureau customers already, but
sure.
it became much more than that business arrangement. You went places together, you met for lunch, just You grew together.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, you're working with all of the same people, and then we can combine resources. We mm-hmm. can, you know, have cooperative efforts when we want to host different activities.
Sure.
So that's we're reaching out to the same folks. So it's good when we can work together.
Yeah, and that helps us get the message out about agriculture.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, we're all kind of, as Vicki said, we're all kind of in this together, and. You know, I've had the opportunity to work in two different counties, my home county one and in McLean County. And, you know, that was one of the first things that happened. The folks at the McLean County Farm Bureau reached out to me and said, hey, won't you come to our board meeting? And, you know, that was such a welcoming you know, gesture by them. And I think a lot of farm bureaus are like that. And so working with the same people and working for the same people, I think, is a really good thing.
And I think oftentimes, too, in extension, I mean, like I said, I was fortunate to be in my home county, but there's the vast majority are not. And I think, too, that when you're new and you may not know everybody and you're trying to figure out your role and what you're supposed to be doing, it's just a welcome call when Farm Bureau calls to say, hey, I want to introduce myself. And, you know, as an ag agent, you have a seat on our county board and invite you to that. It's just like it kind of opens the door. Then you're going to meet people right there at that meeting. You're going to meet producers right there in that county at that board meeting.
Sure.
And that kind of can really help agents get off to a good start, I think.
In almost every county, the County Farm Bureau Board is a group of the most key ag leaders in that area. And it's just a place, I guess it could look overwhelming to a new agent or a new board member coming in, but at the same time, you've got everybody in the same place. And you're working toward many common efforts, certainly for Farm Bureau, but for Extension and for a lot of other groups. So it's a win-win as far as I'm concerned.
I agree. I could say it any better.
Well, I know we kind of skipped over a little bit about Sharon's introduction. Tell us about your farming operation, what you
sure.
and Tripp have going on there in Callaway County.
Well, I grew up with cattle and tobacco, had a little bit of row crop, but my dad actually worked in a factory there in Murray for a long time. And Tripp's family was in agriculture, had a large grain farming operation, had a few cattle. That wasn't a favorite thing of his, but I don't want to make any cattle farmers mad. We were the young group in the farm at that time, and about the time we would get our two small children ready that we thought we could go out and eat or get to do something, then somebody would call and say the cows were out. Mm-hmm. And since we were the youngest group, we were going to have to, you know, go out and take care of that. So sometimes you get a bad taste about that. But anyway, it's my father-in-law came home from World War II. He grew up without his own father. He passed away while his mom was even expecting him back in 1920, and came home with nothing in 1946, and he started farming. We have the original deed. As a matter of fact, our daughter and her family live on that farm now, and he
wow,
actually left
that's
it cool. to my son and daughter when he passed away. He put, just a little bit of money down, maybe $100, and borrowed $1,200 from his older brother and was able to purchase this farm. And like I said, it's still very much a part of our operation today. He grew everything, wheat, corn, soybeans. He was one of the first people in Callaway County or Western Kentucky, really, to grow white corn. Mm-hmm. And he had a connection with, it was called Martha White at mm-hmm. the time. And white corn is primarily for human consumption, not always, but primarily that. And he started about the time Tripp was in high school and started into college. He started growing white corn on contract. Archer Daniels Midland later mm-hmm. bought Martha White and continued those contracts, and we even continue that today. We still haul a lot of white corn to Jackson, Tennessee. We take some to ADM over in Leadbetter near Paducah mm-hmm. as well, but we still grow white corn. And matter of fact, we're just about all white corn this year. Sometimes it varies based on when you get to plant it. But we have sometimes a mix of white and yellow. But mm-hmm. we, of course, grow a lot of soybeans. A lot of ours is double cropped behind wheat. So it's some of those beans have just been planted. That's probably going to be some of the hardest hit by the counties that have had the heavy rains.
Right.
And that's the those are the crops that were completely underwater right. here for a few days. So, and
how much rain did y'all end up
yeah David
year?
You were talking about that Tuesday evening, and I was actually in Louisville working at the home office, but I was getting those weather alerts on my phone mm-hmm. and texting Tripp because he was sound asleep and very
we're
unconcerned
bad about
that.
Yeah
you are
bad
at
that.
Some point I said about the third text, I said, you're downstairs, aren't you? And he said, no, I'm not. But that evening we right there at our home and our main farming operation, we got 7 inches of rain. In Callaway County, there were some areas on our records that got about 7.5, and every farm got at least that, and we do have some located in different parts of the county, and a couple of farms over in Graves County, and every farm got at least 4 inches of rain just on Tuesday evening, early Wednesday morning. Yesterday, I drove to Hickman County for an ag breakfast over there, and it the devastation on the way, driving through Graves County and the Mayfield area, and then through Carlisle and Hickman County, there were roads that I was on were not washed out, but you could certainly tell water had been over the roads and certainly was still standing in a lot of crop ground. Where it had receded, the crop was very muddy. And, you know, it probably will come out of that, but it's going to be hurt in some way.
Sure. And the tough part on that is when it's muddy, you're not getting that photosynthesis that you really need. And it's almost like you need another little shower to wash it off, but you don't need more rain. And it's such a tricky, time when that happens, and it's very unfortunate when that happens, because there's just not a lot you can do about that.
You need about a half an inch maybe to
just
wash
to wash
that
the
off.
Leaves off.
I actually stopped on the side of the road just to get a picture of a bean crop there, and a creek river that was out of its banks, and just you know, the water was still just rushing like crazy, and that was a number of hours, a full 24 hours at least after the initial rain. So, and actually in Callaway County and a little bit of our surrounding area, we have been very fortunate. We have had some good rains. And even when the weather guys will show the map, it's the most concentrated area, and those have been coming from the north. And that is that has dropped down just right on top of us, and not as much even in this area as it has seemed like just slightly west of us. And we were not that blessed last year, maybe kind of in the same boat. We ended up with about half a corn crop. I remember over the 4th of July weekend, it was hot and dry and miserable. And most corn did not pollinate for us, and anything that we did have that what we were able to harvest was just about half the yield. And actually had a crop insurance claim on that last year. Beans were okay, but this year the only crop that we had issues with was we grow just a little bit of canola for the last several years, and the late freeze in December, it grows on the same growing cycle as our winter wheat. And it the canola froze. It's not quite as hardy to withstand the cold temperatures, and we were not able to harvest anything. So we did go ahead and put some regular season beans in behind that on those canola acres, and then just put double crop beans behind our wheat.
We have a little bit of canola in Webster County, and I was actually last night at our Farm Bureau annual meeting last night. I was talking to the producer and was asking him, you know, how his wheat ended up, and asking him about the canola, and he's same thing. He said the canola just didn't make it.
He's got
a little bit that made it, but very little.
And
He was, you know, and that's been a really good crop for them.
It has,
It really has. And I mean, once they've been raising it now for a few years, and they've really seen a lot of benefits to that, and they'll continue to do it. It's just, but. You know, as you was talking about last year with the dry weather and the frustrations with that and not getting the rains. And I know last year, you know, they weren't getting the rains. And in my area, we were. It was kind of like what you were saying this year for you. That's kind of how it was last year. But in my mind, when you was talking about that, in my mind, I'm thinking, and the thing is, this is agriculture. This is farming. And for our folks that may not be actively in working in agriculture or farm, that may just like to listen to podcasts and have an interest in agriculture, this is real life stuff that happens every year.
Yeah.
And I mean, and you do not know what every year is going to give you. You roll. Have no idea.
No control whatsoever. No control.
Rolling the dice.
That's it is. It really is.
As much gambling as going to Vegas.
Sure.
It truly is. And yeah. I mean, it's... And
maybe more dollars. I don't know, Miss Sharon. I wondered sometimes.
Definitely more dollars than I would put on the table
yes,
out there.
Ma'am.
So.
Yes,
you know,
ma'am.
But it is. And you know, those that aren't as closely related to agriculture, that's part of that agriculture industry that they don't see and don't... you know, understand that because farmers in general, they don't really talk about that a lot outside of their colleagues and their friend farm families or their retailers and things that they talk about.
That's right.
Talk to. They're not out talking that at church or the grocery stores or wherever. But that is the reality of farming, and that's
because of the areas that we live in, we all have so many people around us, friends and neighbors and even other family members that don't know a lot about agriculture, but they appreciate what they see.
Sure.
And
sure.
As you're coming out of that winter, you guys know how green and gorgeous the wheat is. When you're coming out of winter and March, it's just absolutely beautiful. When the canola makes it and is blooming,
oh, yeah.
Oh my goodness, we have calls for, can we stop by there behind your house? Can I bring my kid and make pictures.
Yes.
I've got a senior this year, you know,
yep.
and it's kind of like the dogwood trees. Only the good Lord could be in charge of this, but it is the most gorgeous the week of Easter. Doesn't matter when Easter is, but that's absolutely when it's blooming perfect and looks so pretty. So there's so many people that live around us that enjoy that part of agriculture, just the aesthetics of it, and certainly eating. I had a lady one time interviewing me, and she said, I don't think I really have anything to do with agriculture. And I said, well, you eat, don't you? And she said, absolutely, three times a day and several snacks. I said, okay, then you're involved in agriculture.
She probably had on clothes, too.
She had on some clothes, absolutely. So, you know, a lot of those folks don't translate that then when there is a bad year or a good year to how that even affects local businesses. Mm-hmm. There may be fewer new pickup trucks bought, definitely less new farmers. Equipment purchased, maybe fewer charitable contributions made.
Right.
It just really affects the income level and the kind of the cost of living in those local areas and businesses all around us are affected by that.
Sure.
Yeah, and many people, you know, it's hard to wrap your mind around that you don't know how much money what your income's going to be. And that you don't have that steady income like most people do, but you have to, you know, make it work.
Sure,
for the whole year.
You do.
You got to figure out how to manage that.
You get paid once a year a lot of times.
Exactly.
And I mean, you kind of have to stretch that and make that last. And it seems like to me in our small farming operation, Ms. Sharon, the bills come in a lot faster than the money.
They do. They're not on the same cycle, are
That's
they?
Right. So, oh, man. That's
and it's
for sure.
It's really unusual to a lot of folks to think about, you know, we make annual payments on a lot of things because, like you said, we, not completely, but we get paid an awful lot at one time of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way we need to do it. But most people wouldn't function that way at all.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And would want to make a payment or write a smaller check, you know, throughout a monthly payment or whatever that would be. But and really, I grew up in a little bit different world as that with my dad working off the farm quite a bit. Mm-hmm. But Tripp's family was in agriculture wholeheartedly, and he was from the time that he could walk. His dad was an older father and just threw him in the pickup truck like so many farm dads do. And he literally grew up in it. Yeah. And actually my father-in-law got sick and passed away back in 1987, and Tripp and I were just 25. And for us to talk about that now, in no way it seems like this many years have passed. But for us to talk about that now, and our own children are well beyond 25, and you know, we thought we knew stuff. We thought we were grown adults, but oh my goodness, we had no idea what we didn't know. And I guess we were too young to be scared, but it was from that day on, it was us. And it was sink or swim, and I'm so thankful to say that we're still swimming, literally, some days.
And I would say making the connections early on with the organizations that you've been involved with, in that situation, you know, with him losing his dad,
yes,
that and being that young and being in basically being in business with him, you know,
absolutely,
the operation with him, having those like-minded people, I guess would be a way to say that, to kind of serve as mentors to you all if you had questions, you know, and just having made those connections through the organizations with Farm Bureau and the Young
sure.
Farmers was probably a big part of helping you all through that time in your life,
too. It absolutely is, and such encouragement, of
yeah.
course. Some others had been through similar situations, but it really does mean so much to you when people rally around you during those times. Mm-hmm. And I'll have to say, a lot of farmers do this more, but my father-in-law was way ahead of his time in thinking about estate planning.
Mm-hmm.
Again, he was an older dad, so he really was more like a grandfather age to Tripp. And but he was very proactive on estate planning. Mm-hmm. And he was able to, he grew up with nothing. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to certainly pay your share of the taxes, certainly mm-hmm. give whatever is due
sure.
to the right,
right
people. But he worked so hard, and he wanted to leave a legacy behind and leave that farm behind
mm-hmm.
For Tripp and whoever would come. Our children were born, but they were very, very small. And he would be so pleased with what's
right.
going on now.
Right.
He would be shocked. We say it every time we think about putting up a new grain bin or we mm-hmm. trade for a new tractor and Tripp will come back in and say, oh gosh, Daddy would just, he wouldn't understand this at all, but he
yeah.
would be so proud
sure.
of it.
Yeah.
And I cannot stress the importance of estate planning and just having conversations
absolutely.
About that. Everyone should be doing it.
Yep.
Life insurance, estate planning, all of those kinds of things. But absolutely farm families. And any family-owned business, honestly, is an unusual dynamic. Sometimes there are children involved in the farm. Sometimes there are others that have off-the-farm jobs, mm-hmm. but certainly still have a financial risk mm-hmm. in the farm. So it's a very delicate balance, and it's so much easier to talk about those kinds of things before someone passes
yeah.
away.
You know, we've talked about programming and trying to do estate planning. It is such a hard conversation to have, and we've talked about it amongst ourselves mm-hmm. trying to do one, but that is probably the hardest meeting to get any farmers to come to and producers to come to, is talk about estate planning. And I don't know if it's because they feel like they might have to share a little bit of personal information or what, and that could be it, and I understand that. But if we can just come together and get some kind of idea of what we need to do, you know, I think that would be such a great help. But it is such a hard meeting to get anybody to come to.
I mean,
we've tried it. And it is hard. It really is. But that is such an important conversation that we need to have with our families, and we need to have with people that are involved in our operations and those type of things. And we've got resources. UK has resources to help folks.
Kentucky
absolutely.
Farm Bureau does as
right.
well.
Absolutely.
We have two of our own estate planners
right.
that are
so,
free service to members.
So folks, just take advantage of that. You know, you need to take advantage of that.
I think it's kind of like when the preacher starts preaching on, or your pastor starts preaching on tithing, everybody starts squirming. It's just not one of those popular
right.
subject
exactly.
areas, you know, when you say, well, boy, I'm getting my toes down on this morning, you know, and it's kind of estate planning is
the
like that,
way.
And
yep.
we're afraid we are going to have to divulge, you know, what we made mm-hmm. or what we lost,
right.
depending
yeah.
on
right.
the year. So,
in so many different instances, though, it's almost two conversations, and it all depends upon that next generation. Estate planning is what it is. It's preparing of how we're going to divest ourselves of all the assets we've accumulated through the years. But in farming, we may be talking about transitioning a current business from one generation to the next. And that's a different conversation, because that's, if there's ever a time when that older generation needs to be honest and upfront with how things are done and how we've spent money and how we've acquired what we have and what debt we have, it's when you're bringing that next generation in on the farm. And that's really almost, when it comes to having meetings, two different conversations.
It is. It absolutely is. And they're tough conversations. Yeah. But you have to be honest about it. And it depends kind of where you are in your life. I know we are, it's actually been very easy for Tripp and I to talk about because we had to deal with it at such a young age. And we're proud of the, we're able to live through the efforts and reap the benefits of the decisions that his father made. Right. Not everything was perfect by any means, but we can see, even today, we can see how that he set us up for as much success as possible.
Sure. I was going to say, his decisions enabled you to stay on the farm.
It absolutely did. Yeah. And Tripp being involved in it was key to that as well. He had lived, eaten, breathed it over the years with his dad and saw the decisions. You know, we can afford this tractor. We can't afford this one. You particular years, you can trade pickups if you want to, but other times that's not going to work out. Right. So it really depends. And we actually have revisited our own estate plans a couple of times. This sounds silly, but we suddenly realized our children are in their late 30s, early 40s, and our will still says who should take care of them and help them if we pass away early. Well, that ship has sailed. we're not going to die young anymore. We need to look back at a few of those things, and everybody does. Everyone needs to continue to look at, and our assets are different. You have to continue to update those plans.
The way you put that, I really appreciate you saying it enabled you to stay on the farm. I've got a close friend of mine, a childhood friend of mine, who farmed with his dad. All the assets were his dad's, and all the son had was debt. And when his dad died suddenly of a heart attack, there he was with no assets at all, but plenty of debt. And he had sisters and a mother that none of them cared about staying on the farm. They had gone on and lived their lives, and what ended up was complete liquidation of everything, and my friend went to town and got a job. Because those things had not been planned for.
Sure. So. And that is tough. That is so tough. And again, if there are multiple siblings on the on the farm or in a particular family, every situation is different. Mm-hmm. Everyone is different.
And that is tough when you start talking about siblings and the thing about agriculture and any family owned or business, I'm sure is this way, but fair is not always equal. And that is a really hard concept for people to grasp and understand and be okay with. Because, especially if you're not actively involved in agriculture for what we're talking about today, if you're not actively involved, then you want it to be equal.
Sure.
But it can't be.
If you're not in production agriculture, you don't understand the details that are involved in that. And most of the time, and we're all guilty of this about any family business, we just look over there and see the gravy part, but we don't see how the sausage got made.
Yes.
And it's hard to relate those two things. And I have heard my entire life that most farmers are land rich but cash poor. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it perfectly describes every one of us. Yeah, so it's just tough. We have a tremendous amount of assets, but they're just in a way that most people wouldn't know what to do with.
Not liquid.
And we don't. It's perfectly fine when someone does. We don't have a boat. We don't have various things but we've got plenty of land. And they're not making any more land, I guess that's a good investment. Yeah. But it just depends on where you're at in your life at a particular time, and certainly try to instill that, and we have done that over the years with our own children. I don't know if they understand it completely, but that and our children are grown adults, but it's important to have those conversations on a very regular basis and not make it something taboo. Just because you're discussing estate planning doesn't mean we need to talk about my funeral home plans. Doesn't mean we're going to pick out a casket. Mm-hmm. It's not, it doesn't have to be a morbid conversation. It's a way, and my father-in-law did that. It's a way to continue the family business. Mm-hmm. And he knew I've worked hard my entire life. And if I can help you all have this start, And all it's going to do is help you have it. It's not going to carry you for the next 35 years. It may give you a step or two steps up, but then you've got to do something with it. And that's what Truup and myself and all the folks that work for us do. Is we've had to protect that over the years and be able to grow it. And Jay, you said something about staying on the farm. In our very early married life, I worked for USDA. And then when my father-in-law passed away, we knew we either had to hire someone. You don't think that older family member does a lot until they're gone. And then, wow, even delivering snacks and lunch to the field was a very important job. And we knew we either had to hire someone or I had to come back full-time. And I did. And I have been on the farm full-time ever since. And we have made that work. Mm-hmm. We offer a great package to our full-time employees. We still have an employee that started very, very young working for Truup's dad. He had a sad story as well, but he remembers when Truup was born.
Wow.
He was a kid, actually, but he remembers when Truup was born, and he's been with us that long. But it's because we have tried to make our farm employees just like they would be if they went to town and got a job. Mm-hmm. And they have health insurance, and they may have a vehicle. You know, they have benefits that are comparable to a job in town. And occasionally we've had someone to kind of look around and think, you know, I don't know if this is for me or not. But you know what? They usually stay. Mm-hmm. And there's such a flexibility with working on the farm and working outside and being able to stop and go to your kid's program or baseball game or whatever the situation is. And certainly we've lived through all that. We try to be flexible. And I remind Truup of that all the time. I said, hey, our kids are grown, but theirs are not. that weekend away at a baseball tournament is super important. But
absolutely is.
Because you can't get that time back either.
You cannot.
You cannot get that time back, and to have that mindset as farmers, and to have that mindset for your employees is, you know, that speaks volumes to me, to where your heart is, and that you haven't forgotten what it was like to be, you know, to have young kids and active kids, and want to be able to work on the farm, but also want to not miss out on all your kids' activities because it passes so quickly.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think it's real important. Farmers are asked a lot of times, and gosh, we've sponsored soccer teams and baseball teams, and you know, you are a business, mm-hmm. just like so many other industries across our county. Yeah. And
all the rest of the businesses that's investing in your community.
Absolutely. Sure. Put your name on the back of a bunch of T-shirts and send them out on the T-ball field. Promotion of agriculture.
It is.
We talk all the time about nobody is really out there telling our story, but that's an excellent way of doing it. It's by being a part of that community.
And you know what? If we don't tell it, someone will. And I don't want somebody else telling
my
story.
They might not get it right.
They don't have an accurate view of where I stand. And something I say a lot of times in talking to students, we want someone making these decisions on ag issues and all around our industry that knows what the dirt feels like, what it smells like, what it's like when it rains and what it's like when it doesn't, and someone very connected to the farm. We don't, most of the time we hear many politicians to say, my fondest memories are growing up on Granddaddy's farm. Mm-hmm. That's where I got my work ethic, but they stop short of saying, but I left as quick as I could. and that's fine. That's fine. Everyone is not to be a production, in production agriculture with crops or livestock in any way whatsoever. And certainly a lot of folks are doing things that I'm not qualified to do. But it is a viable career, and we need to make it available for kids that are coming out of high school, out of college, whatever. Mm-hmm. Technical education, there's so many ways that they can be involved in agriculture.
Well, and like you had said earlier, when, you know, there are people that I've had people to say that too. Well, I mean, I'm not involved in agriculture. I don't have any connection. But oh, yeah, you do. I mean, and I've said it many times, everybody is affected by agriculture.
Sure.
I mean, you can be directly or indirectly, and that's kind of the way I say it, because we all eat. We all have, as Jay said, we all have clothes. And, you know, and so we are affected by agriculture, whether your livelihood is coming from directly from that or not, it does affect you.
Yes, yeah, certainly whether you're getting a check from ADM or whatever granary you sell to or cattle lot or whatever, but it's yes, you are affected.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Sharon, I know we've got a little bit of time left here, and what are some programs that you work directly with Farm Bureau that you're kind of proud of, that you've kind of taken an active role in? What are some of those programs? Tell our folks about those.
Well, David, I say all the time that I really am a product of Kentucky Farm Bureau programs. And with Tripp and I getting involved through the Young Farmer contest and then the program serving on the state committee and staying involved there for a while, certainly on our district level, that's how I met you
many years ago.
And sitting at district meetings together and have known one another over the years. And so many people are in the same positions that we all are and have been 30-year friends. And that's such a special thing to all of us. But I have participated in those programs. I encourage folks to take advantage of that. Pay attention to the emails that you get from the home office. Our insurance company is such an important part of Kentucky Farm Bureau, but it's absolutely not all we do. Mm-hmm. And the federation side that deals with agriculture issues, and you know, we talk issues with everyone from our local courthouses to Frankfurt to going to Washington, D.C. And we are so proud of the reputation that we have and the doors that we are able to have opened for us and talk about how important agriculture is. Last fall, the three executive committee members were actually meeting with Senator McConnell, and he had a question. We were down in Mayfield about the loss of a large grain elevator down there during the Mayfield tornadoes, and he had a question about that. Mr. Haney, our state president, is a fruit farmer. Mm-hmm. He has an orchard, but he immediately said, I tell you who can answer that better is our first vice president is Eddie Melton, Vicki, mm-hmm. there in your county, and Sharon are both grain farmers, and they are your go-to on, mm-hmm. on grain. Mm-hmm. So it's so important to talk with those folks. And Senator McConnell he said, you know, how is this truly affecting you, Sharon? Were your trucks coming to unload at Mayfield Grain? So where are you going to go now? What's the process and how has that impacted your farm? And I appreciated Mr. Haney handing that off to the right person and Senator McConnell for asking those tough questions and really wanting to know what's it like when you've got a truck loaded with grain and you have nowhere to go. What is that like? And Farm Bureau offers wonderful opportunities to talk about issues all around that in so many ways, and I'm so proud of that. Young Farmer Program's been in place for a long time. Women's Leadership has been, and they deal with a lot of ag in the classroom. Mm-hmm. They go in and read books. They talk about the ways that everybody has a piece of the farm and have done that for many years. I am currently headed to Owensboro for a new program, fairly new. We're in our third year, but it's called Generation Bridge, mm-hmm. and it came out of a strategic planning effort. We turned in 2019, our organization turned 100 years old, and I was just joining the executive team, and Mr. Haney asked me to help lead a strategic planning effort, and out of that came a lot of new processes. COVID hit right in the middle, so it certainly affected communications and how we needed to reach out to our members in ways that we would have never imagined, but it also grew a new program called Generation Bridge, and it's for farmers and members that are age 36 to 49, sort of that in-between group, mm-hmm. and you've seen the group at our district meetings. There's a little collection of younger ones over here. There's some in the middle. I used to be in that group, and then there's an older group over here that I've decided now I'm really more of a part of, and when Mr. Haney first said that, I said, I'd love to do that. I'm mm-hmm. thrilled. Let's talk about the process and who's going to serve on the team. And one thing I was adamant about is I needed to be the oldest person in the room. Mm-hmm. If we're going to look forward, then we have to have people that are going to do that and not just constantly talk about, clearly we've been successful to have made it for 100 years, but you can never, no organization can or business can ever just rest on your own laurels. Mm-hmm. You have to be moving forward and making some changes. changes. So for about the morning of our very first meeting of this strategic planning team, we talked about how we made it to that 100-year anniversary. And from there on, we've been talking about the future. And we really are 5 years into that process now, and really will wind it up this year. But this Generation Bridge program is a big one that has come out of that. And we are expecting about 200 people together in Owensboro. It's our third annual leadership conference. And we've had some of those folks to come in and say, oh my gosh, I feel like I'm at a family reunion. I haven't seen this group since our Young Farmer days. And they, some are involved in other commodity organizations, and that's wonderful too. Sure. We all have membership and are involved in corn growers and soybean association and cattlemen, all of those groups, pork producers and poultry. But we still want you involved in Kentucky Farm Bureau. It's an important part in your rural community, and it's an important part of agriculture.
Absolutely.
Farm Bureau, providing those leadership opportunities for our people in agriculture is fantastic. I mean, I was in the LEAD program, was a great leadership program, and in providing these leadership opportunities for a crowd of people that they don't have very many leadership opportunities. So being able to have those is much appreciated.
Sure. Thank you. I was in the very first LEAD class back in 1998, and I still remember everyone in my mm-hmm. class, and mm-hmm. I bet you guys do too.
Oh, yeah.
You're still great friends. You send Christmas cards, check up on families, and actually was testifying in Frankfurt back during the winter session, and James Tipton, that's a representative now, and he mm-hmm. mentioned that we were in the same LEAD class, and there were several folks sitting in the room that we had made contact with because of that association through mm-hmm. Kentucky Farm Bureau. And again, you just realize the kind of qualities that it develops in young leaders. Mm-hmm. And I was so fortunate to be able to move forward. I was the first woman involved in the LEAD program. Our Young Farmer program has now had its first woman chair of the Young Farmer Committee. All three chairs of the Generation Bridge program have been young women, but I am the first. There have certainly been a number of ladies to serve on our state board, but I am the first woman to be elected to our executive committee. And I'm serving in my fifth year now, mm-hmm. and that's been new for all of us. But Mr. Haney likes to say that I've helped them with their soft skills. that's probably a little bit true.
Eddie needed a little help.
He needed some help. We all do. Listen, I'm no expert on that either, but it has been a new dynamic. It absolutely sure. has been, but it was time. We were just ready to celebrate that 100 years, mm-hmm. and I constantly said, and I feel this way about any program, honestly, don't elect me because I'm a woman and I would be the first one. I don't want the job in that way. Elect mm-hmm. me if you think I'm the best person for the job.
100%.
And if I happen to be a woman, so be it. If not, that's okay too. And that's really how I was asked to sign something the other day to get a little more cost share, because if I was a minority farmer, mm-hmm. and I said, well, actually, how do I qualify for that? And they said, because you're a woman. And mm-hmm. I said, you know what? I don't live by that. Yeah. And I'm going to take what everybody else gets. Yeah. I'm a part of Furches Farms Partnership. Mm-hmm. And this is a group for all of us. And I appreciate you thinking about me, but I'm going to stick with exactly where I'm at. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, you do a fantastic job, and
thank
we appreciate
you.
It.
Yes, thank you.
And I'll take a little credit. She is from my district.
That's
so
true.
That's all good there.
That's right.
Absolutely. And proud of the first district.
That's right. That's right.
You know, as we've gone through this whole show, the two words that I think have been used more than any others were involvement and opportunities. And we always wrap this show up with a timely tip. So for those of the people that are listening, if you want opportunities, if you want to be able to get out and share in some of these experiences that we've talked about, it all starts with getting involved. So that's our timely tip for this week, is to get out and get involved. I think the County Farm Bureau level is the first place where folks should make that connection to get involved. I don't know of a board out there that is not looking for somebody new to come in and get involved and inherit a lot of the responsibilities that have been
Absolutely.
Carried by a small group of people, really. When
Yes.
you look at our counties, when you think about our conservation district, our FSA board, Farm Bureau, it's the same people.
A lot of the same players.
And that's good. They've been really, really good, because, as you said, we want the best in all of our activities. But anytime we can invite somebody new, recruit somebody new to come in and get involved, not only is it good for them, but it's good for the organization as well.
And we all have a lot of experience. We've kind of gotten to that point in our lives that, you know, my husband says that all the time, that I've got plenty of experience now.
Right,
you know?
Right.
But we need to be able to share in that and certainly bring up the next generation of leadership as well as taking care of our families.
My grandfather was fond of saying that experience is that thing that you need right after you get right after you needed it.
There you go.
That's kind of the thing.
It really is.
Yeah. We appreciate you being here today. We want to say special thanks to Sharon for this week's information, and thanks to our listeners for joining in. We hope you've enjoyed our show, and we'll make plans to join us again next week for our next episode. And until then, remember, Kentucky Ag matters.